last year and a half has taught us anything, it's that humans want and need to connect. We're not-for-profit professionals supporting adults to live, work, and grow in a rapidly changing world. We need each other to build full plans and pathways for our clients so that they can achieve life-changing goals. Whoever and wherever you are, if you support adults in learning and life, the Getting Connected podcast may be for you. Grab a coffee, give us just a few minutes of your workday, and let's connect. Hi, I'm Ashley Hoth Murray, and I am joined today by my co-host, Gay Douglas. How's it going, Gay?
I'm doing really well, Ashley. I hope you're doing well too.
Yeah, it's a good day. I've got a good coffee, and that's what matters. We're going to introduce our guest in a minute, but I just want to give a brief background on our topic today. So when I started in social services about 15 years ago, I remember that there were some very niche programs out there. So for a client to be accepted into a training program, they had to check several boxes. This could be anything from gender, age, to type of social assistance. And it all came into play to decide if someone could be served by a particular program. We would serve clients by how we, the outsider and the service provider, viewed them. I remember maybe 8 to 10 years ago, there was all of a sudden a very dramatic shift. And I remember it kind of shaking the literacy and basic skills programs in our region. It was a change in service style. All of a sudden, every program, at least what was under what we now call Employment Ontario, was expected to serve a much broader audience. So niches were only used when there was a very targeted funding with very specific objectives. And then a few years ago, there was even a greater change. There has been a shift recently to how we determine which boxes to check for a client. So we've changed our language. We've changed our expectations that something like if a person of color walks in, we used to just check the box minority. We no longer do that. And minority is not even a term that we would use. Instead, we would ask that client and ask all clients if they feel that they have been racialized. Have they experienced racism in their lives? We don't assume gender anymore, because more and more of our clients are identifying as non-binary. We know that not every disability can be seen, and that physical differences don't equal disabilities unless they're identified by the client.
So you may not be surprised that the District School Board of Niagara provides traditional adult upgrading programs. We might think about an individual who is looking to get a high school diploma or to upgrade their skills. But I did an interesting Google search this morning. I put in my browser DSBN adult programs. And I just wanted to flag that for folks that when you do that quick search in Google, you will find a page on the DSBN website that really lists a wider range of services than you might expect. So it is my pleasure today to introduce you to one of the managerial staff with the District School Board of Niagara. Patrick is the manager of the Literacy and Basic Skills Program for the Anglophone and the Deaf Streams, and as well as the Transition to Employment Program. Now, that particular program is really being profiled today because it is an employment service for individuals who self-identify as having a disability. So we'll be exploring that more with Patrick today. A little more about Patrick. He has been in the social services field for over 15 years, and he has worked with a really wide variety of clients, multi-barriered clients, people with different kinds of backgrounds and challenges, including addictions, disabilities, mental health, poverty, homelessness. And I think what Patrick really brings to his role as the manager of the two programs I mentioned is that he has the frontline experience combined with the managerial experience. So we're really looking forward to speaking with Patrick today. Patrick, how are you doing today?
Thanks, guys. Pleasure to be here, and I'm really happy to be exploring this important topic today.
Awesome. So Patrick, I'm going to ask right off the bat, big word, but what does disability actually mean today, and how has it changed over the years?
Yeah, so to speak to this, I think when I'm going around and speaking to people about what does disability mean and what does it mean as a community, as an individual, as part of Niagara Region, I think it's really important to look at the stigma that's attached to it. As far as we've come as a community, we're still very much attached to the word and the stigma of the physical part of a disability. When you say disability to just any random person, the first thing they go to is somebody in a wheelchair. Absolutely. Or somebody with that kind of disability. Mm-hmm. However, for the sake of our programming, both in literacy basic skills and our Employment Ontario employment service programs, the word disability is a little bit more broad than that. Obviously, disability can mean many things to many different people, ranging from that physical piece to the mental health, to just something that somebody feels is a barrier to their engagement in programs or functioning completely well in society. So I kind of got a little broad there, but to bring it like kind of back down to like what the word disability means, I think like it's really important that people realize that it can mean many, many different things to many, many different people. We experience people who have health complications, and that they would say that's their disability. We have people who struggle with mental health, like anxiety, depression, things that like can be treated or people would take medication for and function. You would not even see it's an invisible disability there for a lot of individuals, and that's what they would say is their disability. And then we have individuals who struggle with addictions or other things like that people don't even think of when they think of that word. To like bring it to the question of like, how has it changed over the years? I think Ashley nailed it on the head when she said that, 10 years ago, 20 years, 30 years ago, especially people would just be a checkbox. And the word disability was very, very specific to you're disabled. And the word disabled is very stigmatizing, very extreme word and something that somebody doesn't want to be labeled with. When we serve individuals, it's about self-identification of what a disability is for them. And it's not up for us to decide what that means for them.
Yeah, I remember reading something recently where we used to say like disabled person. So it was the key part of their disability, of their identity. And now when we speak, we say persons with disabilities, because it's the person first, then they have a disability on top of that, which is kind of flipping how we refer to somebody, which flips how we see them. And how we understand their experience.
Right. And the word disabled, there's some permanency there that I think is a little off-putting. Like when I remember reading some materials saying learning disabled, and that implies an inability to overcome. And I think I can't imagine being that person on the receiving end of that reading. This is a program for an individual who's learning disabled. Mm-hmm. And like, that would be a little off-putting and really challenging to engage in that service or like at least putting me inside of a box that I'm stuck in now and I'll never remove myself from.
Interesting. Well, we're going to explore another word with you, Patrick, and get your take and your definition from you on the word accommodation. We hear when we are talking about people with disabilities, the word accommodation is extremely important So what does that mean in the programs with whom you work and you manage? And how does that specifically look in an education and employment program? What are those concrete accommodations? So the definition of accommodation, as well as some concrete examples for us, please.
Sure. So looking at education and employment separately, as far as accommodations go, we take a very kind of forward-thinking approach to accommodating others. Everything that we do in our programs, specifically with our literacy and basic skills program, as well as our employment service, is always individual-based. So everything that we do is to accommodate the needs of the individual that we're serving, of the client that we're serving. So when the question's at, what does accommodation mean? I think, like, simply by definition, it's just what kind of adjustments can you make to your regular program or service delivery that will support this individual in being successful? And looking at these two sectors individually, as the education sector and the employment sector. So looking at the education sector, we're detached from kind of like the kindergartens through grade 12s, obviously, because we're serving adults and we don't deliver credit programs under my umbrella. That's a different part of adult ed. When it comes to our training programs, the literacy and basic skills programs, accommodation to us means just working with those individuals, identifying the barriers for them, letting them have their voice, and then addressing those barriers. So exploring what the individual's goals are and how can we get there and what kind of things are going to get in the way to help them, or to what things are going to get in the way for them to meet their goals. And to kind of look at some like very specific examples, there's one example I like to use a lot. Now, this is kind of just like a success story more than like an accommodation example. But we have an individual who was working with us who dropped out of school when he was 16 to go work for his family's business. He never learned how to read or write, not a word, not a sentence, nothing like that. He obviously has some barriers to that through learning disabilities and different things like that. But he dropped out of school, worked for his family's business, which ended up closing less than 10 years later. Wow. So he comes to us now when he's 23, 24, doesn't know how to read or write. Can't get a job because he can't even apply to a job without assistance. So like imagine a lifetime now of this individual who's never understood how to read signs, how to look at a menu and order something when he's at a restaurant. Like, that's a pretty big challenge. So he comes to us.
Granted.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So he comes to us. Everything we do is individualized. We built a custom plan for this individual, identified kind of those barriers and where his strengths are, and progressed him through his learning. And within, I think, I met him in mid to end of October. He started with us at the beginning of September, and he was already reading and writing paragraphs. And that really speaks to the success you can have when you individualize programming for your clients, for those people who really need it, for everybody. Like, I think about myself, if I went into, go to the bank and they just said, here is your package to be successful and retire on time and have all the money you need in the world to be successful. And every single person that lives in your area will have the same package and you will all be successful. That's not going to really
work.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what's important to with that is always to empathize and put yourself in those shoes and go, that package isn't going to work for this young man. If we gave that young man a package, he would have been the same place, perhaps grown a little bit because we're offering a little bit more support. But if we just gave him a package and didn't work with him on his goals and overcoming those barriers, he wouldn't have been successful.
Mm-hmm. That's helpful. Thank you. So you really work with the individualized, with an individualized approach around the barriers that have been identified by the client. And I'm sure when you are dealing with adults, Patrick, we are talking about barriers like someone may need childcare, someone may need transportation. They may have a work schedule. I think
absolutely, yeah.
Right? Some of the myths we hear about literacy and basic skills programs, for example, is they may not understand how many of those learners are working. And so having to accommodate them around their typical adult challenges and commitments, I think that's really important. So I'm going to build on what you've told us. This is really interesting. So it's one thing to accommodate clients in the program. So could you tell us a little more about when the learner or the client has moved on to employment and how you support success at that point?
Right. So we're really fortunate enough to have our transition to employment program attached to us and under the same umbrella. Like, obviously, I manage both the literacy and basic skills program and our employment service. So in our case, it's a very comfortable and seamless transition from that literacy basic skills side, that training side, right into employment. That can happen immediately upon intake. If somebody's saying, I want a job, we'll introduce them to one of our employment consultants and get that rolling with them. And it could be a long-term goal of individuals. We have some individuals who have many barriers to in their life and have a lot of growth to do to before they meet their goals, and they can be in our literacy and big skills program for 2-3 years before they're ready to kind of transition on. Everything we do with both of our programs, again, is individualized. I'm going to keep saying that to you because I think it's really, really important. Everything we do and everything that I believe everybody should do should be individualized to the person that's sitting in front of you. And so what we do with our clients or learners who come in through literacy and basic skills program, we sit down, we obviously do our assessments and do all that kind of stuff that every other program does. But what's a little bit different what we like to do is have a conversation. Well, what does this look like for you? How long does this look like? Or how long do you plan on being with us? And what do you want to accomplish by the end of this? And that's happening right in the first engagement, the first meeting with these people. And that is part of the strategy and plan for them moving forward. So if somebody says to us, that employment is their goal. I want to work one day. However, I want to learn how to, you learn this skill, learn how to count, or learn how to budget, or learn how to read or write, or whatever it is that they're learning. People come to us to see for digital skills and all kinds of different things. But they say, I want to secure employment one day. I want to work full time. I want to be completely independent of social assistance, of workers, or whatever it is that they're involved in. And so from there, we create a plan, a strategy for them on and kind of milestones to kind of track that through their time with us. And we don't have a start and end date for these individuals. It should be fluid and natural based on their achievement and where they're going and what they're doing. So when somebody comes to us, we like to like shoot for like, how long do you think this will take you? And we'll provide our input on that as well. But they could be with us for a long time or a short time. And it's through regular check-ins, through touching base with them, doing those one-to-ones with learners. Where are you at? How are we feeling? How are we still working towards the same goal? This is what I'm seeing, things like that.
Very, very client focused.
Yeah. So at some point during this process, if employment is their goal, they'll be introduced to one of our employment consultants based on when they're ready, when they're feeling ready. If they're feeling like they want to start working on towards employment or are really focusing on employment specific skills, we'll do that introduction at that point, because our employment consultants will help them on that journey and work with them one-to-one to get them kind of ready for when they're ready to start applying for jobs and getting that kind of going. But I can talk about this stuff forever, but like, I think that,
you're definitely passionate about it.
Yeah. And, so what I think is, most important out of all this is, for us in our employment service programs, there's no right time to start. And I think that's really important. And I think that's really unique to us, because it doesn't matter what stage they're in, how they're feeling. If employment is their outcome, if that's what they want to achieve one day, like, connecting with us and one of our employment consultants is important, and they'll work with them for as long as it takes for them to be successful. Some people, happens overnight. Some people come in and they're completely ready, prepared, where others, it's a journey. They have to, they have to build their confidence. They have to build their skill set, and have to do a lot of prep to kind of get there.
So can I just ask, when we say when a client is ready or when a client is successful, are we talking about when they're employed, or do you actually walk with them? Like, do you stay on, and do you ever work with an employer, or like, what does that look like?
Yeah. So our employment service program, a transition to employment, we'll do whatever it takes for that person to be successful. And I truly mean that. So I'll give you a really cool example. A typical example. This is something that we would typically do. We had an individual who was living in temporary housing on Lundy's Lane in Niagara Falls, for those who don't know where that is. His anxiety was so extreme that he wasn't willing to work anywhere outside of walking distance. He wasn't willing to take the bus. He wasn't willing to learn. He didn't like to leave his unit, like his place of residence. He just had some pretty extreme anxieties around everything. Like, he didn't want to apply to jobs. He didn't want to do anything like that. So our employment consultant supported him in securing an interview outside of his walking area. So I did air quotes when I said that, for those who can't see it, outside of the area he can walk to regularly.
Where he was comforted, where he was
his outside zone. Of his comfort zone.
His home
right.
turf.
His home turf.
Outside
yeah.
his home turf.
And and she did that purposely, because for her, our employment consultant, and for him, part of his goals was to overcome this anxiety. They built the trust together, and she was able to work with an employer and secure an interview. So she did all this work going and connecting to this employer, going, "Hey, I got this person for you. Great guy. This is his skill set. I want you to kind of give him a shot." Employer bid on that. And so our employment consultant went down, met him outside of his residence, rode the bus. We paid for him to ride the bus, and we rode the bus with him to the interview. She prepped him for the interview the whole way there. And while taking notes, this is what it's like to ride the bus. This is your stop. This is where we're going. This is the route, all that kind of different stuff. Went to the interview, sat and waited for him to complete the interview, checked in with the employer afterwards, rode the bus back, and then did it a second time for his second interview. And this individual was successful in securing this job. And then we were able to pay for his transportation costs until he was able to get his first check. So that's a pretty typical hands-on approach to how we serve people.
Right.
And then after that, we work with individuals for 12 months following their after they've secured employment. And something we hang our hat on is we truly provide as much support to those people who have already secured jobs as we do for the job seekers. And I think that's really special for us, for our program, because we don't just, it's easy for us to get people jobs. That's not a challenge. And Absolutely. We deal with a lot of challenges when it comes to that, but that's the easy part of our job. It's getting the people to keep the jobs is the hardest part. We have individuals who call us every single day who just need some kind of grounding, something to support them, to get them to work every day. And we have individuals who only check in through text once a month after they've got a job. So we'll put as much... Yeah, we spend as much time on those people as we do for the job seekers.
Cool. What I think is really interesting about that example that you just shared is, you know, you talked about anxiety as a self-identified like disability, I guess, in this case. And as we move into our post-COVID, I may be a little preemptive to say post, but as we're moving into this post-COVID world, I think, unfortunately, we're going to see more and more of that type of anxiety, people, you know, needing to leave the house. So to know that your service is providing that, that type of support is great.
Yeah. And absolutely. I can echo that. I can tell you firsthand from like our clients, during this pandemic has been extremely challenging. And to just remind everybody, like, our employment service specifically supports individuals who have self-identified as having a disability. So we had our caseload, we had this number of people that we were working with. And once the pandemic hit, that like was probably cut in half, maybe even more. And then as our second and third waves hit again, it kept happening. And we kept in touch with these people, but they moved from employment ready job seeking to I don't want to leave my house, I don't want to get groceries, I don't want to do these things because anxiety levels are just so high. So
yeah, I don't think we can discount how the impacts of COVID on those kinds of not always visible disabilities. Patrick, I have a question for you. One of the challenges I think of doing a podcast is we're doing this without any visual cues for people. So it might be helpful if someone wanted to contact you or either of your programs, the Literacy and Basic Skills programs, the Deaf program, or your Transitions to Employment program, what's the best way to do that? And if you're going to be giving us a number or an email address, take your time because people may want to write this down.
And sure. we can include these in the show notes as well. So
yeah.
They will
be. No, great. Yeah, so I feel like you're just like lining me up to like home run some of these questions. So something that we do, like this sounds like a simple question, it is. But I just want to make a kind of funny comment on this. But something that we do is we have a no wrong point of entry aspects to our programs. Like it's one of our foundational kind of approaches to helping people is just to reduce the barriers to engagement with us. So we adopted that a couple of years ago. So we don't have a formalized, you need to call this number and speak to this person in this kind of way, and this is how it's going to be. And we do that on purpose because I believe, or I know that it doesn't matter how an individual engages with us, they will be served immediately. And put through the right channels to be successful. So whenever I get this question, obviously you can just Google us and you can find us. I'll provide our phone numbers and general emails for people. But like I said, they can reach out. They can stop in the office if they want. They come knock on our door and we'll help them right away. Or they can reach out to us on Facebook, through email, through a friend.
When you say us, Patrick, do you mean the District School Board of Niagara as a whole?
No, so for our specific programs. So yeah, these okay. Two programs, yeah. So I'm just pulling up the phone number right now. For our Transition to Employment program, they can reach us through email at TTE, so Transition to Employment, TTE@dsbn.org. And through the phone number at 905-327-7642. And for our literacy and basic skills program, they can reach us at LBS, so literacy and basic skills, LBS at dsbn.org. And our phone number is 905-988-1450. But like I said, again, even if you engage with one of our staff members here, you'll be put through the right channels to be served immediately. We don't have wait lists. We don't make people wait. And they get to talk to somebody as soon as they reach out.
That's great. Super. However they can connect. So we are asking our guests, every guest this season is being asked two of the same questions. So the first question I'm going to ask you is, what is the system doing well? And whatever that means to you, you can answer.
Yeah. So this is an interesting question because I think it's just so subjective and based on people's experience, right? So the system, I feel like functionality of the system as far as like serving individuals with disabilities. So I'll stick to that since that's the topic today. I feel like there is a number of really, really strong programs in the Niagara region that serve individuals with disabilities. I think that you can go to any number of services and have really, really great service. I think there's a lot of passion that exists in our region for serving individuals with disabilities. And I think that can be felt by engaging with any number of these services. I think that's what they do well individually as these programs.
If you have any links that you want to share with us, we can put them in the show notes for other services, specifically for people that identify as having a disability. And
sure.
Our listeners might be able to find those as well.
Absolutely. Do you want me to comment on the different programs?
No, and then the and then,
that's awesome.
that's my cue, Patrick.
That is your cue. Okay.
Okay.
So building on the previous question, I'd like to ask you, Patrick, what do you think the system could do better?
Yeah. So, I think there's lots of different opinions when it comes to this specific question. From my perspective, like you said in my introduction, Gay, like I've worked in pretty much every sector you can name in social services, and I've worked with pretty much every type of clientele, and seen it from both the frontline and managerial side of things. So when it comes to what can the system do well, like do better. And I think this is across the board in just like every
whole
area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And not just in Niagara. I think this is far more reaching. I think what we're missing is that a lot of programs miss the true individualized approach to serving people and the collaboration of working with other organizations that might serve them or do everything under one roof. So I feel like in order to help people really, really grow and really advance and meet their goals, like you need to work with people in that individualized way based on their needs and their experience and their world and their goals and on their time frame. It's not like we don't see success by shoving people in boxes and going, this is how you're going to be successful. Here's your booklet, learn. Like, that's not the way people learn. Like, that's especially not the way people learn that we see. Or this is the way to get a job. That's also not true. Like, every single person that comes through the door has different challenges and different experiences and backgrounds, and we need to help them in their own way. And I think the other piece that's missing is, for individuals with barriers, navigating the system is extremely challenging. I think finding the right person right program to engage with in the first place is like so, so hard. Like, how do you even know how to do that? Especially if you have all these struggles and barriers to you even engaging with them in the first place? And then when you finally get there, is that service provider truly referring out or truly looking out for that person's interest in going, these are all the things that you could be successful or that could also help you to be successful and meet all of your goals? Or are they just concerned with delivering their programming and their thing that they do? And a lot of this comes down to resources available. It's not always the service provider's fault that this is the way it is. It's an outcome based on funding amounts and what service providers can do or can't do based on what they have available to them.
So capacity issues.
Yeah, capacity issues. Yeah, that's fair.
And balancing stats, like what's required. So the funder only gives you the money if you have so many bums in seats, right?
Yeah.
It's balancing that with the client.
Yeah, and every funding model is different. A lot of them would be very similar in that, like what you just said, Ashley. But it's a funny place to be because, like, from the funder side of things, you have to consider you're not just an endless stream of money. You can't just print money and go, okay, do your best, here it is. Because that might not work. But on the service provider's side of things, it can be really easy to just become stats focused when you're just focusing on, like you said, bums in seats or meeting milestones or getting meeting these targets that have been outlined for you to get your money. When that starts shifting for service providers and for organizations to that place, that's when effective service starts kind of dwindling and quality starts reducing.
Yeah, it's really about finding that balance in the system, right?
Because
the system's never going to be it's never going to be perfect, but we always want to serve our clients first. But without the funding, that we can't do that. So if you have a solution for that, Patrick, we'd love to hear that on another
That's a whole another podcast.
That's a series.
Yeah. Honestly, comment on that further. Like, I think that the reality is I don't think we'll ever find a balance if targets and outcomes continue to be a thing. And I think what it is organizations need to look towards remaining client focused. We have the success we do because we're not worried about that. We naturally will get our outcomes. We'll naturally meet our targets and be successful if we can just simply serve people well, right? That's what gets people in the doors. That's what helps people meet their goals. And that's what helps us continue receiving our funding.
Thanks, Patrick. I think that's the perfect piece of advice to end the show today. I wrote down actually while you were speaking that if I was to describe your programs, the three programs you manage, you're really focused on meeting people where they are. And I think that is really important. So listener, if you have a show idea, you can email your show ideas to operations@literacylinkniagara.ca. That's operations with an S at literacylinkniagara.ca. If we use your idea on the show, you get a $20 gift card. So thanks for joining us today, Patrick. And thanks for listening, listener. And we look forward to getting connected next time.